Hello and welcome to A History of the United States, Episode 6, Aggressive Negotiations. Remember that this is a listener-supported podcast. If you like the podcast and want to support it, you can do that by signing up for membership at the website, thehistoryofpodcast.com. Just click on the PayPal subscription button. If you think back to Episode 3, when we originally set up Jamestown, there were 7 leading counselors. Within 15 months, Gosnold died from illness. Kendall had been shot, Martin had left, Newport was commuting between Jamestown and London, both Wingfield and Radcliffe had been disposed. There was only Smith left. So, when he became president of the colony in July 1608, what was his first action? He left. He didn't abandon the colony. He just decided to continue his exploring and left Scrivener, who you'll recall was added to the council last week, in charge for the moment. I won't bore you with the details, since Smith was looking for a river which could take him to the Southern Ocean, the kind of which didn't exist, and lots of dealing with local tribes. Various attacks, trading missions, and diplomatic dealings took place, which you can find yourself if you wish, but I really don't think you'd appreciate me throwing name after name after name at you without any real context. But basically, this was a 6-week expedition around Chesapeake Bay, and they returned to Jamestown on September 7th. He had gained much information, but no gold. The fort had been worse, but Jamestown couldn't be called in good condition. These had been the sickly months and many had died, while the fort was not at all ready for Newport's expected arrival. First things first, they had to sort out the constitutional mess, just what was going on with the leadership. On September 7th, Smith was formally elected president, and he began to set about improving things. The eastern wall was taken down so that the colony could expand, and it doubled in size. The church and storehouse were rebuilt, and a military field was created, called Smithfield. This was how things were when Newport arrived with the second supply in mid-October, and Smith was not happy about it. A map Smith had drawn had excited people back in England about the possibility of the Roanoke settlers surviving somewhere along the coast. This would be a huge boost to the company. But Smith, with his practical, long-term mindset, thought that the company back in London was clearly deluded. Newport had been told to return only if he could find gold, a route to the South Sea, and the lost survivors of Roanoke. Smith knew that these were all realistic, and he wasn't fond of Newport either. This approach to telling this story is very easy to take. Hindsight has 20/20 vision, as they say. We now know there was no gold to be found, and that there was no chance of finding the Roanoke survivors, and that Virginia is nowhere near the Pacific. This wasn't known at the time, though. And can we really fault Newport and the Virginia Company for not knowing this? There was every chance that there was gold in these mountains, or a river which could take them through to the Pacific, and the company was worried about how best to secure the future of the colony. Rumours were coming in from Madrid that the Spanish were constructing an armada to attack and destroy Jamestown. If the company could report to the king that they had found gold, or a passage to the Pacific, that would greatly increase the chances that the Royal Navy would consider the colony worth protecting. Newport brought 70 more colonists with him, but not the food for those 70. He did, however, have resources for an exploration of the interior, which Smith opposed. But most people thought this was Smith being petty, since he had been unable to find gold himself, a route to the South Sea, or the Roanoke colonists, and that he didn't want Newport to upstage him. Newport was also to coronate Wahunsonacock, as it was hoped that this would help tie the English and the Powhatans closer together. Smith objected, and it came to a vote, which gives us a good opportunity to address the changing nature of the council. Of the original seven, only two were still on the council, Smith and Newport. We also mentioned last time that Scrivener had been added, but with Newport's return, the council was expanded. New members were Captain Richard Waldo, Master Andrew Buckler, Edward Brinton, Samuel Collier, and Namondack, the Powhatan whom Wahun Sonococ had sent to England. This brought their numbers up to eight. The council sided with Newport over Smith, so Smith went with the council's decision. He and Waldo travelled to Werowocomoco to give Wahun Sonococ the coronation idea. He agreed on one condition. He would not travel to Jamestown. If the English wanted to do this, they could come to him. They had little choice but to agree. The negotiation was a farce, as was the whole ceremony. Wahun Sonococ accepted the gifts, but refused to bow to be crowned. They eventually forced him to drop his head enough for Newport to put the crown on his head. He, in return, gave the English a sign of his royal favour, one of his cloaks and some shoes. Smith found the whole experience very strange, and thought that what had happened was that Wahun Sonococ hadn't understood what the crown meant. This is true, but perhaps a better way of saying it would be that Wahun Sonococ didn't understand what the crown meant to the English, just as the English didn't really understand how the Powhatan chief had twisted the meaning of the ceremony. To the Powhatans, it had become the English giving them tribute, rather than what was supposed to be happening, them recognising the supreme power of King James. As part of this, Wahun Sonococ also refused to help with the English expedition against the Monacans, an interior tribe to the west of the Powhatans. He wouldn't give them guides either, aside from allowing them to use Namondack. The English returned to Jamestown, and Newport was annoyed. Smith had been right. The coronation was a terrible idea, but Newport wasn't one to be discouraged, and so he set about his exploration mission. He would take 120 men, including all the councillors apart from Smith, who would stay behind in Jamestown with 80 men, to produce something to send back to England. Smith was annoyed at this deliberate snub. He was the most qualified explorer, but I completely sympathise with Newport. The two had had a rocky relationship ever since they'd set out for Virginia 2 years ago. Smith had failed in his explorations. It was now Newport's turn. Smith had also been telling them that they needed to do something practical. This was his chance. Newport set off into the heartland of Virginia, and may have made it as far as to see the Blue Ridge Mountains, but they found no gold, no Roanoke survivors, no route to the Pacific, and the locals wouldn't trade. It was a complete disaster. I bet Smith was unbearably smug when Newport returned. Since Newport's get-rich-quick scheme hadn't worked, the English set about far more mundane matters, making practical products. These included a glasswork for which 8 Germans and Poles had been hired to work on. He also took a group of men into the forest to work on their survival skills. When he returned, he found Jamestown short on food, so he went to trade with the natives. They were unwilling, so Smith terrified them into handing over their food. While a few of the gentry hated Smith, his ability to feed the men was making him practically untouchable. Newport set off back to London in December 1608, and had with him letters sent from Smith. He told them point blank that what they planned was deluded. They were not going to find gold, a route to the Pacific, or the Roanoke survivors. There would be quicker ways of getting rich. It would take time to build up industry. That was the only way to advance the colony. They needed to think in the long term. They needed to send men with practical skills, not the gentry who were even worse than useless, as far as Smith was concerned. It was a brilliant work of propaganda. He described things which could be found in Europe and so were familiar to the masses, but stressed their abundance. He also stressed the small numbers of the natives. This was a golden opportunity for the English. They shouldn't let it slip. December was spent with the English trying to secure food, but there was one particular event of note. I mentioned back in episode 2 that it was interesting that the colonists were all men, and the limitations this meant to the colony. Well, as part of Newport's second supply, two women made the voyage. Unfortunately, we don't know the name of one of them, the wife of a settler. We only know of her as Mistress Forrest. But we do know the name of the other, Anne Burris. She was a maid to Mistress Forrest. In December, she married a carpenter, John Leyden, in the first Anglo-American marriage. In 1609, they would have a daughter named Virginia, the first child born in Jamestown. I think that's a pretty big moment. But back to the quest for food. By January, things were getting pretty bad in Jamestown, and Smith travels to Werowocomoco, arriving there on January 12, 1609. What followed was a pretty blunt exchange. The English wanted food, while Honsonacock wanted their weapons. Neither was prepared to budge. They both posed as the wronged parties, and Smith began to fear for his life. He agreed to Wahonsonacock's terms, but only to buy himself some time. He planned to kidnap Wahonsonacock and steal as much food as his men could carry. So, after a few days, negotiations ended, and Wahonsonacock left. Then the hall was surrounded by warriors, and Smith was in trouble. He managed to force his way through with his pistol, but he was just too outnumbered. The Powhatans lied to him to keep him in a place, while Wahonsonacock ordered Smith to be killed later that day. During the evening, he was warned by Pocahontas of what was coming. Smith thanked her, and with this knowledge, was able to make his escape later that night. He fled to Opinchankanough, hoping to get food. It was risky, but Smith was desperate. Opinchankanough seemed open to the deal, but when Smith went to meet him the next day, he found Opinchankanough with the food. They went and spoke, but were soon surrounded by 500 warriors. Smith challenged Opinchankanough to single combat, which Opinchankanough obviously ignored. Smith was desperate. He grabbed Opinchankanough and put his pistol in his face. This was enough to force Opinchankanough to trade. Smith departed on friendly terms, but this was just an act. The Powhatans and the English were no longer friends. Smith returned to Jamestown in early February with food, but the winter had been a complete disaster. Why? Just how had all this happened? Despite the show of friendship, the English and the Powhatans had been trying to trick each other and get one up over each other ever since they met, but the hostility had never been quite this open. The answer to why this was going on was in Werowocomoco. For you see, while Smith was negotiating with Wahonsonacock, the English were not the only Europeans there. There was also a group of Germans. Wahonsonacock made them the same offer which he had made to Smith a year before, except without making any of them wear lances. They could settle in his land, be part of his chieftain, and he would supply them with food and other necessities. They accepted. All of a sudden, the Powhatans had no need of Smith or the English, which explains why his negotiating position fell apart so rapidly. Indeed, while Smith was out trying to secure food, several of these Germans travelled to Jamestown and managed to deceive their way into getting some supplies and took them to Werowocomoco. In addition to a few defectors, they secured 300 hatchets, 50 swords, 8 pikes, and 8 cannons. It was a huge blow to the English, and a huge gain for the Powhatans. Things were looking bad, but next week, they will only get worse. I shall tease that the years 1609-1610 are known in the historical record as the Starving Time, to give you a sense of what's coming. If you've enjoyed today's episode, there are several things you can do to support it. You can go on the website, thehistoryofpodcasts.com, and click on the PayPal subscription button to sign up for membership. We have just launched episode 2 of the Members series, which covers the rise of the Aztecs up to 1428. It's good. You should go and listen. You can also leave a review on iTunes. You can like the show on Facebook, facebook.com/thehistoryofpodcast, and follow me on Twitter, @historyjamie. Feel free to send me an email, thehistoryofpodcast@gmail.com, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.